Their names are Ennis and Jack. And they taught all of us who made Brokeback Mountain so much about not just all the gay men and women whose love is denied by society, but just as important, the greatness of love itself.
My mother comes into my bedroom and she says, I need to ask you some questions. Now, gay stuff, what do you do? What do you do? And I'm like, oh my God.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The mayor's threat to quash Moscow Pride outrages activists across Europe. Felicity is spirited and Oscar embraces Brokeback's direction, words, and music, and exposing the sordid lives of a Southern Baptist sissy. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Charles Hall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 4th, 2006. Demonstrations are being held across Europe to protest the ban on a queer pride celebration in Moscow. Mayor Yuri Luzhkov said late last month that the city government would not allow such an event to take place in any form and that any attempt to hold it will be resolutely quashed. He announced the ban after several religious leaders in Moscow issued threats of disruption and physical violence because they were morally opposed to anything publicly queer positive in the city. Luzhkov's mayoral counterparts in London, Berlin, and Paris, the latter two of whom are gay men, have called on him to lift the ban. Queer activists gathered this week in front of Russian embassies in London, Paris, Warsaw, Stockholm, and Vienna to express their displeasure. In London, and with characteristic verve, Peter Tatchell of the queer human rights group Outrage asked, "Who does Luzhkov think he is, Joseph Stalin? Russia is now a democracy, and in a democracy, people have a right to protest peacefully." The Stockholm demonstration was covered live on local and national radio and reported in morning newspapers the next day. More protests in Europe are reportedly in the works. Moscow Pride organizers said they intend to continue planning the event and are considering legal action, taking their case all the way to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg if necessary. The Pride Parade is scheduled to take place on May 27th, the anniversary of the 1993 abolition of Soviet-era laws against male homosexuality.
Another round of queer bishop bombshells is set to blitz the already wobbly Anglican Communion with the news that a gay man and a lesbian are among five nominees to lead the Episcopal Diocese of California. Conservatives are calling the nominating committee selection of the Reverend Bonnie Perry of Chicago and the very Reverend Robert Taylor of Seattle an act of open defiance against the worldwide church's call for a moratorium on the ordination of openly lesbian and gay bishops. That request was issued in an effort to shore up the schism created by the 2003 consecration of the Reverend V. Gene Robinson as Bishop of New Hampshire. The diocesan election in the Bay Area is May 6th.
Meanwhile, the Anglican Province of Central Africa's Confirmation Court has refused to consecrate gay-supportive West London vicar Nicholas Henderson as Bishop of the Diocese of Lake Malawi. Henderson is popular among the people because of his previous work in Malawi launching a variety of development programs. His supporters carried him on their shoulders during a private visit this week and then blockaded Archbishop Bernard Malongo's headquarters in protest of the rejection. Malongo said Henderson was deemed not of sound faith and that the decision was irreversible.
A new lesbian-gay organization may be the first to go public in Hanoi. According to a report this week in Than Yen News, Hai Dang, or Lighthouse, was created by the Hanoi-based Center for HIV, AIDS, and Sexually Transmitted Disease Prevention and is being funded by Family Health International. The group, which currently numbers about 25, wants to raise the public consciousness of homosexuality in Vietnam. It's time to change our views on the issue as we are in need of both understanding and support from the community, said Pham Thi Nga, the group's director. Aside from overcoming resistance from government authorities, Nga said the most difficult obstacle came from the lesbian gay community itself. The center's social workers scouted Hanoi's well-known gay-frequented clubs, but many were reluctant to join, saying they were afraid to hurt their families if their membership in Hai Dang became known. The group's initial plans include educational and social meetings and outings for its members and the creation of a website. Nga said he expects to develop similar associations in other metropolitan areas, such as Ho Chi Minh City in the country's south.
Homosexuality was considered a mental disorder in China until 2001. A leading sociologist there this week submitted a measure to the annual session of the country's top political advisory body, the National Committee of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, to legalize same-gender marriage. A member of that body's advisory board, Li Yinhe, is a well-known expert on marriage and sex studies with the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. She was to deliver a keynote speech at a queer cultural festival last year that was raided by police and shut down. Li said she wants to end discrimination against gay men in China, estimated by a government survey in late 2004 to number between 5 and 10 million, which some experts have said could be much higher. The number of lesbians in China remains unclear. The measure introduced by Li this week must gain the support of at least 30 of the 2,000-member parliamentary body, which it's failed to do on two previous occasions. Li said that same-gender marriage creates stable relationships and makes safer sex more likely, helping to rein in the spread of HIV and AIDS. But she admits that the cultural environment in the country is not yet prepared for such a proposal.
More than 1,000 queer couples have wed in Spain since legal marriage equality came into force there last year. The figure was provided at a press conference this week by Pedro Zarolo, an openly gay member of the National Board of the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party, one of the main backers of the law. He said 800 same-gender marriages had officially been performed, but the figure came from only about half the country's civil registries, those fully computerized. As of today, he said, there should be more than 1,000 same-sex couples married and about the same number of applications going through. Zarolo married his partner, Jesus Santos, in October. Despite vocal and ongoing opposition from the once more dominant Roman Catholic Church, some 57% of Spaniards support marriage equality.
Scotland has seen at least 3 gay or lesbian unions a day since the United Kingdom's Civil Partnership Act took effect on December 21st, according to a mid-February report in the Scotsman newspaper, which called the figure astonishing. The largest numbers of ceremonies have taken place in Edinburgh and Glasgow.
And figures released last week by the Office for National Statistics counted 3,648 registered same-gender partnerships in England and Wales as of January 31st. Brighton and Hove was the most popular registration site. According to several reports, gay men in the UK have tied the knot at a rate more than double that of lesbians during the first few weeks since they became legal.
A U.S. lesbian minister's conscience and sense of calling absolved her of any guilt for officiating at 2 same-gender weddings, according to a 6-to-1 ruling by a regional tribunal of the Presbyterian Church USA. The Reverend Jane Spar of San Rafael, California, had been charged with misconduct for violating the denomination's constitutional definition of marriage as a covenant between a man and a woman. A national-level church court decision in 2000 found that gay and lesbian unions could be blessed as long as the ceremonies did not mimic and the relationships were not equated to heterosexual marriage. However, Spar said at her trial that her personal vocation as an equal rights advocate aside, the couple's wishes were of prime importance to her. "They said marriage," she testified, "and I was honored to do their marriage so they would not be seen as second class in any way." In his summation, defense attorney Timothy Kahn said, "If it's an offense to believe or to determine in our hearts that these two young couples are married, charge me, because I believe it and I will pronounce it." The majority of the judicial panel wrote that the section of the Constitution in question was a definition, not a directive, and found that Spar was acting within her right of conscience. They also noted that Spar's views were consistent with the normative standards of their Northern California Presbytery and affirmed the Bible's message of inclusiveness, reconciliation, and the breaking down of barriers that separate humans from each other. Some presbytery leaders had indicated that the costly proceeding had been essentially forced by the complaint of a minister from outside the area, so it's not known whether they will appeal the ruling.
Wisconsin has become the seventh U.S. state to place a constitutional amendment on the ballot banning legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. The proposal, overwhelmingly approved in the state legislature this week, outlaws any legal status identical or substantially similar to that of marriage for unmarried individuals. Alabama voters will decide on a constitutional marriage ban in June, while November referendums will take place in Tennessee, South Carolina, South Dakota, Virginia, Idaho, and now Wisconsin. Petition drives are underway in Arizona and Colorado, while equality opponents in several other states are targeting 2007 or 2008. Voters in 19 U.S. states have thus far approved constitutional bans on same-gender unions, most recently in November by a 76% margin in Texas.
And finally, in response to yet another attack on lesbians and gay men in a U.S. state legislature, and the specifics of the anti-queer legislation in this case aren't important, Utah's only openly gay lawmaker, Scott McCoy, this week eloquently defined the real gay agenda on the floor of the state Senate.
Whether or not this passes, gay and lesbian people are going to be in the state of Utah, we're going to be in the high schools, we're going to have families, and we're going to be raising them here. And I would simply ask that you allow us to do that and leave us alone.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 4th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Lucia Chappelle and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Charles Hall.
Ironically, a Southern Baptist preacher's kid was touched by an angel after he became an out gay playwright. You'll meet the irreverent Del Shores later in the program. Although another notable socially significant film crashed what was expected to be a Brokeback Mountain party for the Motion Picture Academy's Best Film of 2005, the heart-wrenching gay love story did add three major Oscars to its herd of trophies at the 78th Annual Hollywood Ceremonies on March 5th. And the night before that show watched round the world, Brokeback Mountain did win the prize for Best Feature at the Independent Spirit Awards, as did Best Director Ang Lee. Capote won the Spirit Award for Dan Futterman's Best Screenplay and Best Male Lead for Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, as expected, went on the next night to win the Oscar. Duncan Tucker won the Independent Spirit Best First Screenplay Trophy for Transamerica, and while she didn't win the top prize at the Oscars, Felicity Huffman's Star Turn won her the Spirit Award for Best Female Lead.
In true independent fashion, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and a 10K lamp blew out and sprayed glass all over everyone. And when we went to the truck to try and get a new lamp, we found that the driver had gotten drunk and run off to Mexico with the keys. I looked up and I saw our key grip Bob on a 14-foot ladder with a flashlight in his mouth trying to jerry-rig a light so we could continue shooting. And he was going, this movie better win some awards because it's a pain in the ass. So I want you to get out your pens and paper, and his name is Bob Izzo, and he's the best and coolest key grip, and we kept shooting thanks to him, and I just want to say, Bob, we won the award.
Brokeback Mountain collected Oscars the next night for Best Original Score Composer Gustavo Santaolalla.
I'm so proud to have worked in this movie, Brokeback Mountain, a movie that once again show us that love is what makes us all very similar, in spite that we can be so different too. I want to thank my family, my wife Alejandra, my kids, Ana, Luna, and Don Juan, and last but not least, I want to dedicate this to my mother, a mi madre, to my country, Argentina, and to all the Latinos. Para todos los Latinos, muchas gracias. Thank you.
Best Adapted Screenplay for Larry McMurtry and Diana Ossana.
The duty of art is to send light into the darkness of men's hearts. Thank you, Annie Prue, she's right over there, for trusting us with your brilliant short story. Thank you to Ang Lee and our brilliant cast for breathing life into our words.
And best director for Ang Lee.
First of all, I want to thank two people who don't even exist. Or I should say, they do exist because of the imagination of Annie Prue and the artistry of Larry McMurtry and Diana Ossana. Their names are Ennis and Jack. And they taught all of us who made Brokeback Mountain so much about not just all the gay men and women whose love is denied by society, but just as important, the greatness of love itself. And I just did this movie after my father passed away. More than any other, I made this for him. And finally, to my mother and family and everybody in Taiwan, Hong Kong, China, 谢谢大家的关心. Thank you.
It was a unique year for the Oscars, dominated by independent, relatively low-budget films dealing with politically charged issues, few of which have been box office blockbusters. In accepting his Best Supporting Actor Oscar for another one of those movies, Syriana, George Clooney couldn't resist commenting on conservative critics who claim that Hollywood is out of touch with mainstream culture.
I would say that, we are a little bit out of touch in Hollywood every once in a while. I think it's probably a good thing. We're the ones who talk about AIDS when it was just being whispered, and we talked about civil rights when it wasn't really popular, and we bring up subjects. We're the ones. This Academy, this group of people, gave Hattie McDaniel an Oscar in 1939 when blacks were still sitting in the backs of theaters. I'm proud to be a part of this Academy. Proud to be part of this community and proud to be out of touch.
That was Oscar winner George Clooney, and I'm Greg Gordon for This Way Out.
We're just two, not many colors, and a stained glass window, and love is the light shot net through.
From live theater to the silver screen to cable and network television, Del Shores has come a long way from his conservative roots, both personally and professionally, and that dual journey informs his work with a blend of honesty and hilarity. This Way Out's Steve Pride sat down with the prolific Shores for a discussion about real and fictional drama, Southern Baptists, and a wide variety of sissies.
48-year-old playwright and screenwriter Del Shores grew up in Texas, the son of a Southern Baptist preacher. His brother still lives in Texas and is a Southern Baptist preacher. Oscar Wilde once said, "To be understood is to be exposed." For Del Shores, that moment came in 1995 with the premiere of his fourth and most autobiographical play, a family dysfunction and gay coming out saga, Sordid Lives. Shores, then married for 9 years and with two daughters, burst from the closet personally and professionally in a big way.
It's not something that I ever really wanted to be because I was told that it was a horrible thing to be. So I didn't want to be that horrible thing. So I knew I was attracted to guys at a very early age, like early teen, but I just pushed it away and I never dealt with it until I was in my 30s, already married with two children. Then I came out of the closet and, the hinges of the door just sort of shattered. I'm very proud and glad that I've dealt with it and happy, very happy now. We have such fears in our lives. And after I came out to my Southern Baptist preacher dad and my mom and the whole family, most fears went away because that was the scariest thing that I ever did. Because, you first of all, you face that fear of rejection, that you're not going to be a part of the family anymore. The one great thing about my mom, and when she passed away, I found all of these files where she had done so much research on my behalf about gay. She really wanted to be informed, and I wish that other people in my family would do that, because she wanted to know what it was about and asking way too many questions. So the first time I go home is like Christmas. I bring my daughters, they're 2 and 5 at the time, and my mother comes into my bedroom and she says, "I need to ask you some questions." And I go, "Oh, okay." And she goes, "What is it exactly that you do?" And I'm like, "What? And you know, she goes, you know, gay stuff. What do you do? And I'm like, oh my God, Mother, I am not gonna talk to you about this. There are books you can read. And then so finally she just kept on, and I thought, okay, you know what? So I just basically looked at my lap and started explaining a lot of things. I left some things out. But, you know, that was the kind of mom she was. And then at the end of this conversation, she goes, well, the other day, your daddy and I were watching Sally, Jesse, Raphael. And she said, now, I don't mean to be ugly, but there were just a bunch of freaks on there. They were all kinds of people in transition. One was a man that used to be a woman. One was a woman. And then some of them had started hormone therapy. She said, now, you're not going down that road, are you? No, Mom, I'm really happy being a gay man. I want to stay just like that. And then there's that long pause, which, of course, I put in the movie Sordid Lives. She goes, well, are you the woman or the man?
Del Shore's plays include Cheatin', Daughters of the Lone Star State, Southern Baptist Sissies, The Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife, Daddy's Dyin', Who's Got the Will, and Sordid Lives. The latter two were made into successful motion pictures, and the film version of Southern Baptist Sissies starts shooting in just a few months. But even if you've never seen one of his plays or films, you've still probably encountered his work as a writer on such TV shows as Queer as Folk, Dharma and Greg, Ned and Stacy, and even, oddly enough, Touched by an Angel.
I did one episode of Touched by an Angel. I did the Felicia Rashad alcoholic episode. And I got to tell you, I have made more residuals off of that one episode than probably I made doing one whole year of Ned and Stacy. It was a crazy thing. I wrote the fourth episode of the show. And they've novelized my episode. It's crazy. And so the next season, I actually was offered a job, and I chose Ned and Stacy over Touched by an Angel. And to this day, I think it was probably the biggest financial mistake of my career.
Del Shores is loved by most of the actors who've worked with him. Even his former in-laws remain close and regularly appear in his plays. But from his three-year gig writing Queer as Folk, there is one actor of which he is not particularly fond. Randy Harrison, who played Justin.
Randy was so ungrateful for being on the show, and he was always turning down press, and basically, by the end of the show, nobody wanted him to do press because he would trash the show that pretty much made his career. I hope you're listening, Randy. Not good for actors to do that, because you know what? People like myself won't ever hire you again. Honestly, I adore actors, and most actors that have worked with me, and I, quite frankly, I'm not close to Randy and didn't know Randy that well because he was very distant from any of us, but I think it's appalling when an actor bites the hand that feeds them, and you can certainly use this. I have no qualms at all about it, and basically, at a point with the show, they had to call his people and say he is not allowed to do press anymore because he would literally trash the show. And the character and the path of the show. So it was very unfortunate. So, you know. But the rest, I gotta say, that cast was a dream cast.
In preparing for our interview, I read article after article that referred to openly gay writer Del Shores. So I asked Del about his default salutation.
Del Shores, openly gay writer-director, or openly gay writer-director Del Shores. And I'm really cool with being gay, and I love that I'm out, and it's okay if I'm the poster boy a little bit. But I don't really feel like that is all of the pie. You know, there's a lot more to me than just that. So sometimes it bothers me a little bit. And I got to tell you, our own community sometimes gets, like when I wrote The Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife, I actually had people say, oh, well, you've betrayed us. There's nothing gay about this play. You know, I'd won the GLAAD Award for Southern Baptist Sissies, and the GLAAD committee called me and go, well, are you going to allot tickets for The Trials and Tribulations? I said, well, you know, it's not a gay play. And they were very upset at me. They felt like I had abandoned the community. But there are stories to tell that don't necessarily have to do with being gay. I mean, of course, Willa Dean had a gay son, and that was part of that. But I just write from, I'm a storyteller, first and foremost.
In Los Angeles, at the small 99-seat Zephyr Theater, squeezed between trendy shops on Melrose Boulevard, there's a repertory revival of all six Del Shores plays called A Season of Shores, featuring many of the original stars. Fans of his work are flying in from as far away as Germany, and the run is selling out almost as quickly as the next play is announced. For me, Southern Baptist Sissies hits hardest. It's the story of three boys growing up gay in a church that condemns them and in families that deny them.
I get more letters from gay men and gay women who have felt the torture and the pain, and they find this play very healing. And if that's all it does is heal some wounded hearts, then I'm really cool with that. But I got to tell you, when I was living in Sherman Oaks, across the street were some wonderful people who were Southern Baptist, and they came to see the play. I was so scared. I was going, oh my God, you know. They were the only ones on our block with a Bush Cheney sticker in their window. It was very small. Everybody else had very large billboards, and it was almost like they were ashamed. And she called me after she saw it, and she said, I'm bringing my sons to see your play because I have taught them incorrectly.
This has been a conversation with Del Shores. For more information on Del, his website is delshores.net. For info on Season of Shores in Los Angeles, visit seasonofshores.com. And as always, for info on LGBT film, visit prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
There's a rage way down inside me. A fire that's branded my soul, and it leaves me as one of the many, with a hate so hard to control. But I've seen that hate is not the answer. There's a time when we all must decide to step on up with wisdom and power, and say, children, let's give up the fight. Oh, consider this for a moment or two.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Charles Hall, Rex Wachner, Graham Underhill, Jerry Trowbridge, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Levi Kreis sang Stained Glass Window, set to be heard in the upcoming movie Southern Baptist Sissies, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on CJAM Windsor, Ontario, Trans FM Broward County, Florida, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.